Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to me to go.
Well, folks, I think we all knew that someday this would happen. But it doesn't make it any easier. John Tortorella is no longer an NHL coach. He and the Columbus Blue Jackets have opted to part ways, which means that as of right now, we do not have any additional retorts on the horizon for the immediate future. Your thoughts?
We need to find somebody new who's going to snap at the media after games.
All right, John?
Well, the retort segment hasn't been what it used to be, right?
It's true.
It's pretty minimal.
Maybe he's
doesn't
matured.
Make it easy, right?
Yeah. Right. I know. It's difficult. It's very difficult.
The big time when the retorts comes is the playoffs. And with Columbus not making the playoffs this year, you know, it didn't look good for the retort segment in general.
And frankly, but I mean, if we don't have any retorts.
It is a sad day.
Yeah, if we don't have any retorts in the playoffs, like, I don't even think I want to watch them.
Like, what are we even doing here?
How can we have retorts without the torts?
That's a great point. I mean, it's just re-coach.
Yeah.
And the playoffs do bring it out in him.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting situation. I do, you know, I can't help but wondering, is there any chance that it actually ends up being a happy day for Seattle Kraken fans? Because, I mean, could John Tortorella be the first coach in Seattle Kraken history? I don't know.
That would be amazing.
Would it?
To bring him to do a live retort.
That's true.
That would be, and we could like instigate the retorts during press conferences.
We could be the one that he's mad at.
Yes.
Ask him dumb questions.
Yeah, all the time.
That might have to be our angle. Like, that's our exclusive angle, I think. I think that's the special sauce, is that we ask the dumb questions that get him to go off. And that's going to be like the new tagline for Sound of Hockey, is like, Sound of Hockey, asking the stupid questions that get John Tortorella to really flip out.
Honestly, like, what do you think about him as the potential Kraken coach?
I'm not a fan.
Ooh, but
I think they could do a lot worse. Uh-huh. There's a lot of people that would make me more sad if they came here, but I just think he's
Babcock,
he's
like, still.
Yeah, that. I would take Tortorella 1,000 times over Babcock. I just think there's a certain level he can get you, and that's it. So, I mean, if you want to get into playoffs every now and then and maybe win a round, I think kind of his better days are in the past. And it's not even the player stuff to me, because, you know, if you looked at when it was announced he was leaving, a lot of his players, current and former, were like Seth Jones tweeted out the GOAT.
Yeah.
So I think this notion that all the players hate him is not necessarily accurate. I just think he's got a certain ceiling as a coach, and I think we can do better.
Yeah, that bit about the players really surprised me, actually. I have always, you know, gotten this idea in my head that the players don't necessarily like playing for him, and that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, the reason that I think we have that in our heads is because there's always this controversy with the star players, right? And the guys who don't, like, battle at both ends of the ice and don't play the way that John Tortorella wants. So, Andy, contrary to your point, because I haven't, you know, had him as a coach for one season before he got fired of my favorite team, like you had in Vancouver. But, you know, I've always viewed him as a very good coach. I think he gets a lot out of a team and has gotten a lot of a team in Columbus that, frankly, it's Columbus, right? Like, they're not like this team of superstars or whatever. They always have some good players, but I think he got a lot out of what they had there. So, you know, I think they could do worse, like you said. If Seattle were to end up with John Tortorella as the first, I can't believe I'm even saying that out loud, that's a real possibility, but
well,
it feels like
and
a real,
you know,
possibility.
It would be entertaining for sure.
Yes.
He was the one that got Columbus their first ever playoff series win when
that's
they beat
right.
Tampa Bay, right? So that franchise has kind of relatively stunk for a long time until like recently. and I don't think the team is that good. And I think he got a lot out of it. So that's my non-expert opinion, is he would be a decent coach no matter what all the baggage he comes with.
I like your phrase, relatively stunk. That's great.
That's what I was giggling about.
Sound of Hockey episode 137. We're calling this the Dion Phaneuf episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Dion Phaneuf scored 137 goals in his career.
Oh.
Now, I did want to bring him up because he was notorious for having a no-move clause toward the end of his career. And
his
skill level did not match that, did not warrant that. However, he did earn it when he signed the contract. That's one thing I always like to point out to people that say, oh, he should just waive his no-move clause. Well, I think I've even brought it up on the podcast before. Like, he earned it. and he deserves that, right? He might have taken a pay cut to get that no move clause. And so he's not going to get that money back if he waives his no move clause. So, but we're going to see these no move clauses during the expansion draft. We already saw one last week with Milan Lucic. I anticipate a couple more. You know, Eric Johnson is a big one in Colorado to keep an eye out for. So just that's why I brought up Dion Phaneuf this time.
Well, I love it. So episode 137. So it is Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter. Joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle. We have a big episode today with a very, very interesting guest that I think you all are going to love listening to. But Andy, I have a question for you. I'm a little confused by this one little thing here that happened. So I tweeted out this evening before we started recording, we have a really interesting and fun interview coming on this week's @sound_hockey podcast. And that's all I have to say about that. And @crazycalico, Molly, she responded and said, can we guess? And I said, of course, but I don't think you'll get it because I didn't think she would because it's not like somebody that people just would assume we're going to have on the show. And she wrote, is it Robert Kron? Now, how would she know something like that,
that's
Andy?
That's amazing. Yeah. What a brilliant line. She
My guess is that she listened to the Thunderbirds radio broadcast on Saturday night against the Ever Silver Tips.
So, I mean, really shame on me.
Wait a sec. Hold on.
Explain to me, why are you just sharing all of our company secrets on broadcast?
I've been talking to Tom Boyning that we had interviewed him and that he was a really great guest and that he was going to be at the game. So once the game started and we're on the air and Tom turns to me and says, I understand that we have the crack in the head scout here and that he's going to be on the Sound of Hockey. When can we expect that? I was like, this week.
Okay.
So, oh man.
I should have let Tom know that we kind of like to Tom's keep that under wraps.
Tom's on my list.
No, it's not his fault. Don't blame Tom.
He said it on air. Yeah, but you told him.
He was plugging our show, though, too.
All right, Andy, you're on my list, too.
You both are on my list. And Tom is right at the top of it.
I did not tell him that we keep that secret. That was on me.
Yeah, Tom is actually second on my list behind Strawberry the Rabbit. But
we appreciate the plug.
Yeah, we do. That's true. It is a great interview. Robert Kron, stick around. You're going to love it. It's very, very interesting, very informative, and we get some good chuckles in there as well. All right, what's the latest Seattle Kraken news, Mr. John?
Before John goes, I'm going to jump in here. The Seattle Kraken signed their first player on Wednesday, Luke Henman from the QMJHL. Humongous news.
They poured the slab at Climate Pledge Arena. So it looks like a rink. It's just really nice cement now. So similar to how they did at the practice facility about a month ago. You know, it's pretty neat. It's, you know, it looks like you'd expect it to look.
Yeah.
And the views from that slab were pretty spectacular. I love how that one end has the glass and the window and the one up high, and it looks spectacular in there.
I love the machines that kind of smooth the ice out. Those things that people just ride on and just make it ultra smooth. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it needs to be flat.
Yes, true.
You know, I think I'm kind of becoming a slab guy. You know, I see all these slab pictures that the Kraken have been tweeting the last month or so.
You're a fan?
I'm like, wow, that's a nice looking slab. Like, I want to go and like skate on rollerblades on the slab. Doesn't that look great? Like, just
so
smooth.
They should have a rollerblade game. They should set that up.
Yeah. I think they call it roller hockey, but whatever. If only there was some sort of game that they could play on that.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, so they also launched the Kraken Foundation this week, which this is interesting because this is something that feels like it's one of those things that most organizations would consider it a bit of an afterthought, right? Like, oh, we should probably do something to give back to the community now that we're up and running. But no, this is something that they want to have in place from day one, which I think is pretty cool. But anyway, it's called the One Roof Foundation. John, what can you tell us about the One Roof Foundation?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it should be no surprise that things that they're focused on, but you know, the three kind of pillars, if you will, that they're focusing on is youth homelessness, and youth care has been kind of at the forefront throughout this entire process. Considered nonprofit partners with them. Youth access to hockey, which is great, getting access to people that might not otherwise have access to hockey. So that's pretty cool. And then keep in mind, the One Roof Foundation is actually between Climate Pledge and the Seattle Kraken. So the third pillar is environmental justice, you know, elevating the voices of, and investing in those communities that are historically disproportionately impacted. Now, I read that right from the press release.
I was just going to say, wow, you're using some big words there, John.
So, and what kind of kicked this off as well is that the availability of Seattle Kraken license plates.
Oh, yeah.
And 75% of the revenue generated from that goes to the foundation and helps those targeted areas. So that's pretty cool too. So that's also a note that you can get your Seattle Kraken license plate in Washington State. So get on it.
Finally.
Finally. Actually, you know, people have been asking about that for a while. I'm like, it'll happen.
People were really excited about the license plates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it happened a lot sooner than others. So, yeah.
I took a picture the other day of a car that had like the Seattle Kraken license plate holder. It was a regular Washington plate, but then they had like C Kirken, like SEAKRKN as their plate. And I was like, man, they really could have just waited like a few months and gotten like the whole kit and caboodle.
The full brand. Yeah.
But so anyway, if you want that now, you have to be C Kirken too?
I guess, but there's not enough digits, right? Like you have to be really
right,
clever.
You're right. Yeah.
Or could you use the letter C and maybe throw people off?
Yeah. Like Calgary does with their Sea of Red?
Ah, yeah.
Ah, interesting.
So that would mean that if you're the one that does that, you would actually not be the first person that ever thought of doing that. So I don't know if that's really that clever then. That's unfortunate. But the plates are there. You can get them. I believe the prices are something like $60 to $125, depending on the size of your vehicle and if you're going to personalize the plate and all that stuff. So it's out there. And that's it. That's pretty much all we have for Kraken news this week. But we have plenty of Kraken talk in our interview, which, as we mentioned, is coming up soon. Other teams around the NHL have determined whether they're in or out of the playoffs at this point. We are recording on Monday. As of tonight, the Montreal Canadiens became the last team to qualify for the playoffs. So now any games that are played from here on out are mostly meaningless in terms of who can get in and who can get out. Obviously, there's a chance that some positions flip that give home ice advantage. But it is fascinating that like we have playoffs starting now on Saturday for the U.S. And then, Andy, your Canucks are going to be playing for like four more weeks, I think, right? Regular season?
At least another full week and a half.
That's bizarre. I mean, it is
crazy. The playoffs will be going while the regular season is still getting finished.
Yeah, truly bizarre situation there. But, you know, it's cool stuff. So we have Florida and Tampa Bay are set as a matchup, which I think is so cool.
What a matchup.
What a matchup that is.
They played tonight, Monday, and there was a lot of chippiness. There was a lot of scuffles and, you know, just kind of amping that up for the first time in all Florida matchup.
Yep. And then we also have Boston against Washington. So that should be fun as well. That starts on Saturday. So we have like actual playoff hockey. Like that's coming in a few days. That's crazy. That is just wild how quickly that is coming up. Speaking of teams that are not making it to the playoffs, the Sabres definitely not making it to the playoffs. And we had an interesting little exit interview with Jack Eichel that happened on Monday, and it sounds like things are going pretty well there. Andy, your take on the Jack Eichel situation?
It seems like it's a great relationship. He's going to be a Saber for a long, 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 long time, like maybe 2 months more. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. He's been out for most of the season with a herniated disc. Apparently, there has been a lot of contention over his medical prognosis with the team, and he had apparently gone and sought out a second opinion on it, which said he should have surgery. The team said vetoed that, said no. We don't want you to have surgery. So he's not happy. He's made some pretty ominous quotes this morning or today. You know, he said stuff like, you know, I just want to get back to playing next year, wherever that may be. Mm-hmm. And he said something like, I have to think of myself first. It's all, you know, right now I got to take care of myself. So it doesn't look good for the future of the Eichel and the Sabres.
Yeah, you know, it does make you wonder very much what it's going to take to land a Jack Eichel on your team, because clearly teams are going to be calling about Jack Eichel now, right? Because every team could use a Jack Eichel. So, I mean, it's got to be at least a full-time player. It's got to be at least a prospect, probably a couple of draft picks.
Yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a big haul for Buffalo, and it's going to essentially come down to who can make the best offer. So we'll see what happens there. I think that was pretty good analysis, wasn't it, saying who can make the best offer.
You broke it down.
Yeah.
But, like, I saw somebody speculate, Seattle could make a run. And it's like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
how that would be possible,
right? Well, with all the assets that they currently have.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, draft picks, right?
Like, yeah, but giving up draft picks before they even have a team.
Well, I don't want them, but yeah. I'm just saying, like, okay. Yeah. Essentially, you know, top five pick overall this year. But is this the year you want a top five? Or would you rather have Jack Eichel? So wouldn't even consider that. If I was a Seattle Kraken, and, you know, again, I'm not a GM by any means, but there's no chance I would do that because you're going to get a much younger prospect that won't have the same ceiling as Jack Eichel, but, you know, they're just not in a position to, like, you know, use Jack Eichel effectively. They're not, he's not going to, like, put them in a Stanley Cup position right away. So they're years from needing a Jack Eichel.
Yeah. Wherever he goes, I hope it's to a team that's got some talent around him. You know, because he's got the skill. He's never put up the monster season that McDavid has, even though they were drafted 1-2 the same year. But he's obviously the talent that he has, right? And he's been kind of hamstrung with who he's been playing with and around. And so it'd be interesting to see if a big team goes out and gets him. I know there's a lot of Rangers talk, right? The Rangers are all excited about just bringing him down the state, but we'll have to wait and see.
Why don't they just put him in Tampa? Tampa needs more talent.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Vegas, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Vegas will figure a way to get him.
They'll have some weird cap gymnastics they'll have to do like they did tonight.
Yeah, they play with like six forwards one night. Yeah.
10 forwards tonight. They had 10 forwards tonight.
I'm glad you mentioned the New York Rangers because we need to talk at least briefly about this Big Apple circus that happened the past week. Now, we know it's kind of like old news, right? And like if you're a hockey fan and you were paying attention to anything happening in the hockey world, then you got a lot of New York Ranger talk the last week. So we won't belabor it too much, but we got to at least touch on it because it was pretty wild. It all started, you know, we talked about the initial incident last week, but kind of briefly because, again, we try not to harp too much on the Tom Wilson stuff because it just
Andy didn't want to talk about it at all. He was like, I'm done talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to sit there and break down film footage. And
his disdain for breaking down Tom Wilson news is akin to his like for John Tortorella. So this thing that happened, it was really bizarre. So the league did not suspend Tom Wilson. They just fined him the maximum amount, which, as we've discussed on previous episodes, is $5,000, which is not very much money. He was allowed to come back and play. In the meantime, the Rangers put out a statement basically calling for George Parros to be fired by the league and saying, I don't know, just all this crazy stuff. It was like one of the strongest statements I've ever seen any NHL club come out with, and that's with like all these social justice things that have happened over the last year and a half, 2 years, right? Like huge, huge things that have happened in the world. And this is the stance where they're like, all right, now we need to stand up and really make it known, which I thought was interesting. Then the following day, the owner of the team, who is well known throughout the sports world because he also owns the Knicks, and the Knicks are also a complete disaster, but James Dolan, so he fires his GM and his president of hockey ops, and he brings in Chris Drury to be the new GM. And oh, by the way, the Capitals and the Rangers are about to play each other again on Wednesday night. So there's a line brawl. There's a fight. There's another fight. There's another fight. There's six guys in each penalty box. And while all of this is happening, TJ Oshie, he just is coming back from his father passing away, his first game back, right? So he's playing with a heavy heart and all that. And what does he do? He scores a hat trick in that game that was a complete disaster and had 141 penalty minutes. I mean, it was something else. And Emily Kaplan did a bit on, I think it was like Around the Horn or one of those ESPN shows, and they were like, you know, what did you think about this? And she made the point that, like, this is not what we should be talking about, right? Like, this is a big thing for hockey, and a lot of people are talking about it, but it's not the good part of hockey, right? We have Connor McDavid. This is what she said, right? Connor McDavid is doing these incredible things. We should be talking about him and the incredible things that he's doing, but instead we only talk about hockey because of this thing that has happened. And you know, she was absolutely right. I thought it was very, very well said. So go look up that clip if you haven't seen it. But man, what a disaster. What a disaster.
What do you guys think about that? Like the line brawl, the face-off. I had a friend who's not a hockey fan who said to me, like, you know, I hope they realize that hurts the league in the eyes of non-hockey fans. Like, they don't, that's going to turn non-hockey fans off.
Yeah, I think it mostly will. I think there's old blowhards that really like seeing that. I mean, even I'm like, oh my God, look what's happening, right? And like, initially I'm like, oh, this is something. But then you think about it a little bit, you're like, oh, what are we doing here? This is just dumb.
Well, I mean, I do
like it.
You know, I'm not a big fan of fighting in the game in general, but at the same time, I don't think fighting should be out of the game.
Right.
And to me, the things I struggle with are if you're a willing combatant, right? Everybody squared up, theoretically wanted to fight, even the Capitals. It's kind of gimmicky. And as long as it doesn't happen that often.
Which it doesn't.
And it doesn't.
Something like that, yeah.
I think it's okay. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of necessary at times. Those are things I just struggle with, mm-hmm. you know, because I want to kind of appeal and broaden to other people. And having fighting in the game probably is a little bit of deterrent, will turn people off from the sport. So I'm such a fence sitter here, but at the same time, like I just struggle with it. Like as much as stage and all that crap that we anticipated, I saw so many people chiming in and talking mm-hmm. about it and tuning into games. And so then it's like, okay, well, damn.
Did that really hurt the league or did it actually help in some weird way?
Yeah. So I don't know. You got to think long-term and like what are the long-term impacts? Yeah. You might have a big hit where you're leading story on a lot of sports broadcasts, but
I kind of feel the same way with you that you do about fighting. Like I don't mind the odd fight. I like the ones that are born out of some sort of passion or anger or incident. I didn't like in the 90s when every team had an enforcer and they would just fight for the heck of it. Like there's no bad blood or anything. They're like, well, I'm the enforcer. You're the enforcer. Let's fight for no reason.
Or just to like rally the crowd like that. Yeah. That to me seems really gimmicky.
But if it's like, in the heat of the moment and like, oh, you just hit me. And the reason I ask is my friend's point was interesting. And I also heard the other side of it too. Like a local sports radio guy, I'm not going to name the names, but somebody who's not notoriously not into hockey, who talked about, happened to hear him talking about it and said, you know what, after watching that, I'm in on hockey. So I think there's that side of it too, where it might actually bring some people in, maybe for the wrong reasons, but it might bring them to the table. It's an interesting dilemma. I don't know how we'll know the answer to it. But
and it's funny, what you know, the fact that you brought up local sports radio is for years, you know, as I was kind of doing this NHL of Seattle thing and doing the grassroots thing, I would hear local sports people that didn't know hockey, they'd just talk about the fighting. And talk about, I'm ready to go to games and see the fights. And that's what they think of hockey, is that it's mm-hmm. fights. And it's like the reality is fighting is just not that common.
So it's just interesting to wonder. I mean, it's hard for me at least, to have a sense on it because I'm already a hockey fan. Like, you know, and I already know what that was and how it doesn't ever happen very often. So it didn't really affect my fandom in any way, but I could see both sides of it for a non-fan.
Let's move on to Sound of Hockey's 3 stars.
I think we have to have an episode where Darren talks like that throughout the entire episode.
I tried to last week. I mean, I basically did. We had 3 back-to-back silly segments or bits that require me to talk like that. Bits. So, well, segments or bits. We started with bits that had that voice, and then by the end of the show, I basically was just segments talking like
the
that.
The hypothetical.
Yeah. Anyway, Andy, who's your star of the week?
My star of the week is a repeat offender. I think we had him on the show as a star episode or two ago, and it's Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers.
Wow. You're making him sound like
a couple times.
Yeah. He's a superstar.
Apparently.
Well, I saw a fun stat with him, which is why I picked him. So he is, since being traded from Calgary, he's played 10 games with the Florida Panthers. He has 15 points, which is pretty good. And that's the most that any Panther has had in their first 10 games in the history of the franchise, which is pretty impressive, right? That's a storied franchise. But do you guys know who he passed?
Stu Barnes. Stu Barnes.
Good guess, but no.
I saw it tweeted somewhere. I appreciated John's enthusiasm in that incorrect answer. I don't know.
It was Pavel Bure.
Okay. Which is interesting because he comes up in our conversation with Robert Kron, if you stick around for just more minutes.
Totally why I picked this player. Totally.
Yeah, I would like to segue that, right? But John and I haven't given our stars yet, so that wouldn't quite make sense. But anyway, so my star.
Future segue.
Mm-hmm. Before I give my star, I just want to point out, Andy, that your star from last week, Peyton Krebs, he broke his jaw, and he's not playing anymore this season.
The eye curse.
The eyed curse.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on Sam Bennett this week. Yeah, that's for
sure. My star of the week
Stay indoors.
Uh-huh. Taylor Hall, who, you know, he had a rough go in Buffalo. We know that other people have rough goes in Buffalo. We've already talked about it. He got traded at the deadline, and he has been really great for the Boston Bruins. On Monday, he actually scored the game-winning goal, and it was one of the coolest goals of the season. Like, walked through Nick Leddy, slipped the puck between his legs. I think he backhanded it top shelf to get the game winner. So Taylor Hall, he has emerged from the darkness that is the Buffalo Sabres. He has stepped into the light that unfortunately is the Boston Bruins. So good on him. Congratulations, Taylor Hall, future Seattle Kraken.
He was shooting like 2.3% with Buffalo, which is just atrocious. And I think since he joined the Bruins, it's like 18% or something like that. So it's amazing what a new team can do for you.
Yep. And my line about future Seattle Kraken, I kind of say in jest. I don't really think he's going to end up being a Seattle Kraken anymore. Well, it's
funny you say that because I'm just hoping he re-signs before the expansion draft. Mm. Because then that'll move somebody down the Boston Bruins.
Smart thinking. Lineup.
Yeah, and it could be Craig Smith, who I really, really like. So,
cool. John, anyway. Your star of the week.
Man, you know, I love this segment because I like to kind of pull like some deep cuts. But how can we not put Connor McDavid on this list?
All right.
Have you guys heard of this guy?
Yeah,
he's pretty good. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I heard he's no decent.
Andrew Ferentz. He's no Andrew Ferentz, though.
He's had 15 points in the last five games.
It's absurd.
Scored four on Saturday night to hit the 100-point mark in 53 games. I mean, obviously, he's insane, but he's just on fire right now. He's scoring at will. It's funny. I watched that game Saturday night where I'm like, okay, he needs 4 points to get 100. I don't think he's going to do it, but I might as well. and all of this, he scored like early right away. And I'm like, okay, all right.
Maybe.
All right,
so he still never gets on TV in the US.
Yeah, bummer. That wraps up our three stars. Let's move on to our interview with Robert Cron. We now welcome onto Sound of Hockey a veteran of 770 career NHL games with the Vancouver Canucks, the Hartford Whalers, the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Columbus Blue Jackets. And after his playing career, he became an amateur scout and has risen through those ranks to become the Seattle Kraken's Director of Amateur Scouting. Welcome to the show, Robert Cron, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be here.
Good. We are very happy to have you here. John and Andy have been, they're big scouting and draft nerds, so they're pretty excited to pick your brain
yes,
on some things.
Confirmed.
Yeah.
So I'm on the hot seat here.
Do you have 3 hours free for John and I to ask?
Yeah.
My game's at 6, so
yeah. We're going to start with your NHL career. Well, that's good. I mean, we're doing this recording at 9 in the morning, so we've got plenty of time.
We've got time.
Yeah. We're going to start with your NHL career. I'm curious about how it started because I see, you know, looking back at your stats, you made a jump from the Czechoslovak League to the NHL. It doesn't look like you really spent any time in the minors, and you immediately played 76 games that season for the Canucks. So, you know, it's always kind of a hot topic, right, about developing players. Do you send them to the AHL to get seasoning? Do you try to develop them with the big club? What did you do as a young player to make yourself stick right away in the NHL?
Well, I guess I had the advantage. I was already 23. I got drafted in 85, and it was way back, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, so I couldn't go right away, or was I ready to go anyways. But so it took me a while. You know, I had a chance to develop and play a couple of the World Championships for the national team, and I played already like 6 years in a Czech league with men. So I think I was a little bit more ready, being older and having some experience to go. And at the same time, you know, Canucks were going through kind of a rebuild, I think. So it was a good timing. You know, Peter Nedved just got drafted out of Seattle here. And, you know, I don't know if they needed a Czech guy to kind of be in the locker room with him or not. But I'd like to believe that I made the team on my own. But no, like it was a big jump, but maybe not as big as for some of these guys coming out of junior.
Mm-hmm. So as a 23-year-old coming from Europe, do you think that you should have been eligible for the Calder Trophy? Because that's kind of a hot topic in today's NHL.
Well, of course I should have been. there was a little bit of a competition up there. I think Fedorov, like names like that. Well, I was close.
Yeah. So, you know, 1990-91, that was an important year, though, for Czech and, I guess, for Slovak players. But back then, they were Czechoslovak players. Can you give our listeners a little bit of background on what was going on at that time in the world?
Well, it was obviously a lot of changes, especially, you know, in Europe and in our country as well. I was actually playing at that time in 89 for one of the two army teams. like back then, Czechoslovakia had two army teams, one in Slovakia, one in Czech Republic. And we were actually playing in Prague in the November against the local team as an army team on a day that, you know, the demonstration started and all that movement was going on. So for us, it was kind of weird because we're the army. We don't know how the government's going to react. Are we going to go arm and go against our people or whatever? We kind of didn't know.
Wow.
But we went through the game fine. The fans were good. And, you know, obviously a lot of changes. And in January, basically, it happened very quickly. Like, you know, the government didn't push it. You know, they had a little bit of violence in the street. But everything kind of seemed to be as a normal, smooth transition. And that kind of opened up the door for us as players to be able to sign, you know, contracts in different countries, North America or Europe, and do it legally. Before that, you would have to defect, and it was not something I was kind of exploring, even though I had a chance in 86 at the Hamilton World Junior. But so, you know, like a lot of guys were drafted by then, and obviously the NHL scouts always find a way into the rinks, as I know now. So so we were, you know, there was a contact. Agents, they just flooded the market there. We're trying to grab as many guys as possible, and guys were, you know, open to it. So
yeah, that's really interesting. You know, another guy who came over in kind of a similar, well, not quite the same process, I'm sure, but Pavel Bure, and he was on your team there in the early going with Vancouver. Did you ever beat him in a foot race?
Yes, I actually did.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, we're, you know, if you remember back then, we're, you know, the All-Star game, you know, the skills competition, we did that in our teams as well for our local fans. And I have to say, I'd like to brag about it, that I beat him at that lap. So,
wow.
It was, you know, Ron Wilson was the assistant coach, and he had the stopwatch. So I don't know if that's okay.
Maybe he gave you a head start or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun to chase Pavel in the practice anyways.
Yeah. It's pretty cool to look back at every now and then you see like highlight reels of Pavel Bure's most ridiculous goals. And you're like, it's just startling, like some of the stuff that he would do with the puck. And
yeah, I know when he came in, like it was first time they introduced him to us was in San Jose in the old Cow Palace, and he kind of, it was a funny way he came through California. Somehow they got him over because in Russia it was still not really that open, I don't think. And he had an immediate impact. Like this guy was electrifying. Like it was unbelievable.
We recently had a colleague of yours, Norm MacIver, was on our show, and he had a couple of unique experiences in the NHL. One was going from a team that moved from one city to another, from Winnipeg to Phoenix. And you have a similar a history there from Hartford and Carolina. What do you remember about that experience of moving from one city to the other?
It was interesting, so to say the least. I mean, it was kind of on one way, it was sad to leave Hartford because, you know, it wasn't really a big market. But once you played there, you know, you realize the fans were loyal and with a good rivalry, Boston and all that. So I don't know, like as a player, we didn't have a choice, right? But there were other cities that we were actually told that we might be going to. One of them Columbus, one of them Las Vegas. And at the end, yeah. So, you know, actually it was to the point that wives were looking at places in Vegas and, you know, trying to do the, you know, the market research and stuff. But, and then they told us we're going to Raleigh. I mean, North Carolina first, so everybody assumed it's going to be Charlotte, and then we went to Raleigh. So it wasn't a hockey market at all. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we ended up playing in Greensboro for 2 years before our arena was finished. So it was a bit of an adventure, so to speak.
John Forslund called that last game in Hartford a meaningless game with a lot of meaning. And it's funny that now here we are, and Ron Francis is the GM, and you're the head of amateur scouting, and John Forslund is the play-by-play guy here in Seattle. It's kind of wild to see that's all.
That's pretty cool, actually.
You mentioned Columbus there. You eventually did end up in Columbus, and for their expansion team. How did you end up there, and what was it like playing for them that first season as an expansion team?
Yeah, so obviously there were two teams coming into the league, Minnesota and Columbus, and you know, so they had a draft, and I knew I'm going to be left unprotected because, you know, Jim Rutherford was pretty open about, you know, early in the season telling me I had a chance to go to Philadelphia on a trade and kind of waived. I had a no trade clause. So I said, I don't want to go. I was kind of comfortable in Raleigh, and then you basically have no chance. But I think Columbus was good if you compare Columbus and Raleigh, they had an unbelievable arena back then. They had a practice ring right next to it, so it was easy on the trainers, easy on the players. The owner, you know, bought a plane for us. Like it was a really, really good experience there, and the people loved it, embraced the hockey right away. In Carolina, we had to teach people what is hockey, really. Like in Greensboro, nobody knew hockey. It's a college country. Right now they do, you know, obviously we know what they're doing now, but in Columbus, it was right off the bat, it was really good. I think we sold out 80% of the games first 2 years, and we had a good team. It was actually a very, very easy transition.
Do you think you always have that pedigree with Columbus being on that team the first couple of years? I mean, I always think about being the first NHL team to a market. Those players will be remembered by the fans early on. I'm a San Jose Sharks. I got into hockey because the San Jose Sharks came to town and down there. And I remember those players, right? That's what I remember the most, even though they weren't maybe the best players in the league at the time or the best Sharks over the first 10 years. But I remember that. Is there some of that went on with Columbus when you played there?
Well, I hope so, certainly. My claim to fame is I won the first ever face-off against Zhamnov. So
forever
on the wall. Yeah. You know, our director of amateur scouting back then, Paul Castron, just gave me he has a poster of it. It was just sounded kind of cool. And he wanted me to sign it and had Zhamnov sign it. And it's kind of from the top. So that's my claim to fame there. But I hope that people remember those teams because I think they would, because like you said, in Sharks, like the excitement about a new team coming in, and you know, people follow it, and so hopefully, you know, it's been a long time. But
I will tell you, I grew up a Wild fan, which obviously the Wild came in at the same time, and I very much remember a lot of those players, you know, from that same season.
He went ahead of me. I almost ended up in Minnesota.
That's right. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how that shook out, but he did get selected, I think. So
yeah, he got selected first. I got selected second to Columbus. That's how it went.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a connection to that first set of players. So I'm sure you have a lot of big fans in Columbus that I'll never forget seeing you play there. So that's a cool thing.
Well, I hope so. The ESPN came out with the classic line, and it was Sanderson, Knutson, Kron. So I got it framed.
There you go. That's awesome.
So I want to move on to scouting. We got a question from a listener a couple of weeks ago. It's a pretty good one. And he asked, what is the best route a kid can make it to the NHL? And we gave our answer, but you're probably a little more qualified to give this answer. So we'd love to hear your take on that question.
What is the best route to NHL? Well, it's a long...
Whether it be junior or European or...
I think it's individual, to be honest with you. Depending on the kid, you know, nowadays junior, obviously, CHL is a great league. Now, USHL is a very good league as well. European leagues are maybe not on the same level, but a lot of young kids get the chance with older players that they learn that way. But I don't think there's one particular way to get there. I guess if you're going to succeed, you're going to succeed anyways. And you just want to be, you know, the best possible player wherever you are at that point, and the scouts will find you and the way will open up for people. But I can't really recommend one or the other. That's just up to the player and parents and advisors to decide. But I think, like for European kids, which I have a lot of experience with that, if they come over and play CHL, not everybody's mentally ready and physically ready for that, to leave country and be on their own. I think if kids have the mentality, okay, I need to move away from my parents and stay with the billets and hockey is my passion, do it. If not, then, you know, take your time, I guess. So I view it that way. I don't think one or the other is valued more.
Seems like all those leagues are all pretty similar as far as competition. Do you, when you're looking at it, trying to compare prospects, you know, who want to play maybe in Europe or want to play in the CHL, do you have to kind of weigh what league they were in when trying to evaluate them?
Yeah, we'll look at that, obviously, of course. The competition has value. At the same time, for me, if the kid is performing anywhere throughout his, you know, young career, it means that he's finding the way to adjust and play and excel, basically. But yes, there's a difference, you know, when you talk about the kid playing in BCHL compared to, you know, playing in OHL. That's definitely, you have to look at it, or college, or, you know, European men's league or something, KHL. Yeah, we value that.
And similarly, do you sometimes look at players that are eligible for the entry draft and you think, okay, if, you know, maybe they're playing college or maybe they're playing European junior, and you're like, oh, well, if we could get them over to the CHL for a season, that could really help their development. Do you sometimes match that in your analysis or your scouting, or is that really kind of come after the fact with player development?
It's a player development, but we do ask, you know, what, especially the European kids, what, you know, most of them are drafted to CHL anyways, or USHL. What, you know, what would you think coming over? Like, for development guys, it's much easier when they're here. If you already have them, you know, and we can work with the teams here better, and, you know, the guys can come in and work with the players. They play more minutes. But again, it's individual decision. And not every, like, a lot of European kids stay behind because they're promised to play for the big club, and they promise the minutes. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. So I think for the development team, you know, it's better to have them here, but at the same time, they might be better off staying where they are and developed there, because the kids are drafted and they're still, you know, 4 or 5 years away from playing anyways.
And so I'm sure you're probably sick of answering a lot of the questions about the challenges of scouting this year.
Oh, it was easy.
but so we're all aware of those challenges, but is there anything new this year that you had to adapt that are really going to be carried forward into future years, whether it be a higher dependency on video or some other kind of integration of analytics a little bit more than maybe you're used to? Is there anything that carries over to future years?
You know what? I think that we already had video. We already have analytics, all these tools. I think that the one challenge was, I'm a big believer in live scouting. And this year actually proved to me that there is a bit of a difference when you watch players on video and then you see them live after, you know, being at the U18 World Championships in Texas last week. But I think that the video will be utilized more, and there's obviously a better quality video. We're still dependent on the camera angles in certain rings, so not everything is the same. We don't get the NHL feed. So, And analytics, again, on the amateur side is a little bit more tricky because they don't get all the statistical data they need to really. And they'd be the first ones to admit it. But we do look at it, and we implement that, and we already did that before. So I don't think there was – for me personally, I don't think there was nothing really that new, except that we spend way, way more time watching on video than live, and we have to be careful with that.
And so, you talked about being a big fan of seeing the players live. And I always think about, you know, as the director of amateur scouting, for that first round pick, how frequently do you need to see a player to feel comfortable about that recommendation to the team? And then a follow-up question, how many Michigan games have you been to this year?
Will I give it away if I say all of them?
Sure, you weren't alone there.
Let's put it that way. It was early on. It was the only games available, so everybody was there.
Right. Yeah.
But it's no secret they have three great kids on that team. And for me, you know, the guys, they come at you right away, but you want to be certain. So at least five times live, I'd like to see guys that I really, you know, and then if needed, even more. Like, there have been guys I've watched 30, 40 times just to make sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it's you know, but I love it. Like, it's cool. Like you know, in the ring, you can change seats. Like, right now, it's not possible because of all the protocols, but
yeah,
I like to move around and see the players from different angles, you know, ice level way high in the corner, like, in from behind, from perspective when I play, what they do. And so it's you know, live viewing for me, video is great, and it's a great tool when you want to focus on certain skill. We can isolate certain skill and really dissect it, but live is life, I have to say.
So how many games have you seen of John and myself playing beer league? Because I haven't noticed you in the stands, but that doesn't mean you're not there, right?
Well, that's what he's here for. Yeah.
You gotta work on your toe drag, so I'll tell you that.
That's true. That's true.
You probably didn't see me. I hide and I watch you. Still young enough to go.
You know, I actually think there's something to that, though, right? Like, the kids that, you know, they know that they're being scouted. I wonder if they know that you're in the building, if it has an impact on how they play.
Well, they know. I mean, obviously, the agents work with them. every game is being scouted nowadays everywhere in the world. So there's always up to 20 scouts in the building. So they know it. This past week was very interesting because one of the rinks in Plano was a really small rink with a nice, nice area where only scouts were jammed in, like shoulder to shoulder, really. So yeah, I was thinking about the same thing. Like the kids are literally 7 feet away from you and they see all these teams and it's hard not to think about it, I think, but they, you know, they did fine. Like everybody, it wasn't like they were looking at the stands or whatever, but I think that a lot of kids think about it. Some kids might get tight a little and, you know, oh, they're watching me, I have to be better. But I think for most part, I think they're pretty comfortable with it, these kids now.
You mentioned the different vantage points. Whenever I see scouts at WHL games, and I go to a lot of WHL games, they're always up in the corners. What's it about the scouts in the corners? Is that just because that's the only place to sit in some of those rinks?
Right now it is, but it's a kind of, you get the best view, so to speak, from the corner. I like corner too, but I change a lot. Like I try to kind of change spots each period if possible. But the corner gives you a better, you know, understanding of, you know, how they move. You see the benches, you see how they, you know, you watch everything. Like so from the corner is probably the best view for the scout to evaluate.
Skipping ahead in the process to draft day, so you're at the table, I'm sure you have your list together. How much debate is there on that day? Like are the decisions dynamic, or, you know, are you just going off of this is the guy we want next?
Yeah, well, hopefully by then there's not much discussion. Hopefully by then we got everything, you know, discussed already, and we don't want to beat the dead horse, but like you really want to go into the draft day and be comfortable with your list and the order if you have it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, especially first two rounds, we create that list for a reason. At the same time, a lot of things happen. Trades happen at the draft day. Ron might, you know, get an offer that he wants to execute. So we have to be ready for that as well. And, you know, and there's a time for you to, so to speak, play the draft as well. You see what you got already in the first three rounds, and then maybe then there's more discussion after the first round, really, because we kind of take a look at the list one more time and see, you know, what happened, who's left, and are we still comfortable with the order? So I think we'll be ready. But
yeah, we've all on this call played fantasy sports, so I think we totally understand what you go through.
Similar, well,
maybe
prep,
you can
I'm
help
sure.
me out there a little bit.
Well, we were
send
we were,
me your list. Let's debate that.
Yeah, we were joking that every time that we've done any kind of fantasy sports draft, you go in this with this plan, and within like 30 seconds, your plan is ruined because, like, you know, the guy that you wanted first is already off the board, and it's like, well, now what do I do? I'm completely screwed now. Right? It's probably a little different because you're it's not real, and B, you're putting together a whole team versus you're just trying to pick, you know, certain individuals for the future. But are you trying to find organizational fits more often than not, or are you of the best player available approach?
You know, depends. I'm the best player available in a particular spot, and you know, some teams, every team does it a different way, right? Like I do think that you should look at, you know, organizational depth, which we are not in a position to look at anyways right now because we don't really have any,
right?
So
there's no organization yet.
let's get as many picks as we can and build from there. Let's leave it at that.
You mentioned the U18s, which just completed. And by the way, those scouts all showed up on TV. You can see their heads from the TV broadcast, but in that one building. How critical was it that event happened for both players and scouts? That gave you a chance to see some guys you may not have seen, especially the OHL guys.
Yeah, it was huge, especially where there was uncertainty for a long time if the draft will be going forward or not. And once they decided yes, this was essential. And I think that actually they did a great job. It was originally supposed to be in Plymouth, Michigan, and I think they did a good job moving it to Plano, Texas, and Frisco. It was good. It was really good, especially, like you said, the OHL guys. Well, you know, some of them played overseas. Some of them played in the USHL, but some of them didn't play at all. And it looks like Shane Wright didn't miss a beat, not playing at all. So, but yeah, it was really good to see those guys. You know, in a normal year, you got to be careful evaluating players just from this tournament because you don't want to do that. I mean, but at this point, we didn't have a choice. So we have to kind of take a look at it.
In your years of being involved in scouting and the draft, Is there a quote unquote the biggest prize that you either that you selected that was a steal that was maybe underrated everywhere else, but you got him and he turned out to be good? Is there a guy that stands out like that for you?
It's hard not to say Sebastian Aho, because you know, if you redraft that, and it was like, it's really difficult to evaluate now because I don't think anybody knew what he's gonna be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, and it's very hard to do, but that will be probably the name that, you know, Ronnie and I talk about. Like, it was really good that it happened for us that way.
Then you got him in the second round, right? Or was it early?
You got him in
the
second round, yeah. And when you look at what he's doing now, like, if you redraft, he would be top five pick for sure. So.
Well, I went back a couple of years ago and looked at all the pre-draft, you know, rankings of him, and some people had him like as a fourth round pick, even as low as that.
Yeah, I think the highest I saw was third round, and it was 4 or 5. Like, it was for him, it was the size. Like, he was a tiny kid. Like, I knew him inside out since he was 15 years old, but he was. That's the beauty of scouting, right? Like, you always try, you know, Brandon Point, like, again, like Tampa Bay takes guys that are not in the league before him, and they take mm-hmm. him at third. So we're trying to learn from all of that and see if we can implement all the tools that we have available to us to kind of, it's harder now to find those guys later in the round. It's like, yeah. So.
I want to talk about one last thing here, and then we're going to play a short game with you that we did not not tell you about beforehand. But I promise.
Well, hopefully he didn't scout. He didn't scout okay. the podcast. Yeah. That's what I'm hoping.
So goalies. So I actually, you told me I need to work on my toe drag. Now I know that you have not been scouting me because I'm actually a goalie.
Doesn't mean you don't have to work on your toe drag,
right? But I'm curious about
the goalie's toe dragging. The goalie is a big part of the breakout, man.
That's right. That's a good point. Very good point.
Not Darren.
No, I don't do that. Yeah. I'm just trying to do the basics here. So I'm always curious about how scouting goalies goes. I assume that most of that has to be handed to a goalie scout. And then the other part of that is I wonder how much a goalie has to prove himself to be your top pick as an organization, right? Like, we've seen Askarov go in the top round. We've seen Spencer Knight go in the top round. But it's so unusual when you look at the grand scheme of things, right, for a goalie to go that high in the draft. It is unusual. So I'm curious, like, what level of elite play does a goalie have to get to open your eyes to be the top pick?
Well, it's hard to say what level. It's what he does when he's in the net, right? Like, you know, how he stops the puck. Does he give his team a chance to win every game? Does he steal games? It's like, goalie is the hardest position to scout, and it takes, you know, a little longer for the goalies to develop as well. So that one's a very tricky. And you know, you mentioned a couple of good goalies, and obviously Spencer Knight's proving it that he probably will be the goalie that everybody thought he will be. Obviously, if the goalie plays on a high, you know, high level and in a league where he's facing a really good competition at a young age, then we look at it and try to evaluate. And you're right, like, you'd like to involve you know, goalie coaches or goalie scouts as much as possible, because it's a very difficult position, a very unique position to play, as you know, being in the net every week, I guess. So you usually don't take goalies that high, but if they're special, they're hard to find. So let's put it that way. Mm-hmm.
Do you have like an amateur goalie scout, or is the, you know, because it seems like it's voodoo to me, like evaluating goalies. So.
It is to me too, and I play the game for a long time. They're special people, okay?
Yeah.
For
yeah.
somebody on this podcast, crazy. They're yeah. special yeah. people. Just to go in the net.
Our listeners know, that's for sure, yeah.
No, but we, you know, as you know, our one of our scouts is Andrew Allen. And, you know,
right, so okay.
And one of our scouts in Finland is a former goalie, so that helps too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Andrew's been on the show.
Yeah, I always loved when coaches, like, if I ever got into, like, an argument with a coach or whatever, they'd be like, just go stop the puck. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's just that easy. All right.
It is. I play with Dominic Hasek.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. And, you know, he didn't have any kind of technique. He just threw himself around. He just stopped the puck. That's it.
No, he didn't. He was the first one to drop the stick and, you know, use his hands to steal pucks from the yeah.
Man, talk about a guy I like seeing old highlight reels of. When Dominic Hasek comes across my Twitter feed, I always stop and watch that one. But all right, so we're going to play this little game. It's called Let's Get Quizzical. You mentioned before we started recording that you learned your English in an NHL hockey locker room. So quizzical is not a word. We've totally made that up. So if you're,
curious. I'm already in a Google trying to find that out.
Basically, we're just going to ask you some questions about your own career and see if you know these tricky little things. So my question is, what team did you score on? So against, what team did you score against the most in your career?
Is it Pittsburgh?
It is. Ooh. That's correct.
Wow, yeah.
All one right. for one.
So yeah. Why does that jump to your mind? Why do you know that?
For some reason, I know that every time Tommy Barrasso was in the net, I'm going to score a goal. I don't know why. Plus, I played against Mario and these guys because I was a checking line and they didn't play any defense.
Oh, nice.
That's interesting. Nice. That's really interesting.
Insightful. Yeah. You're already ahead of Norm, just FYI. Yeah.
I listened to Norm, by the way.
Okay. So you heard
this man. Okay. Who assisted on your goals the most in your career?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
It is very tricky.
It could be either Michael Nylander or Andre Nikolishin.
Andre Nikolishin. So you get a half a point for that. Yeah, it was crazy. You didn't actually play for him that long or with him that long. It was only the first couple of years.
Yeah, 2 years. But for some reason, we found a good chemistry. I actually saw him last week and we're good friends. And
oh, wow.
It was good. Like it was, I don't know what it was, but I could read off of him and he knew where I was going to be. So.
All right. Whose goal did you assist the most on?
I think that one I probably won't get at all. I have no idea.
You're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Let me see. It had to be.
Are you emailing Namita right now?
She's sitting next to me. So I can't say. It's either Hartford or Carolina. I can't say who. Blaze Bataglia, maybe? No.
It was Jeff Sanderson and Sammy Kapanen, 10 each.
There you go. Wow. I wish I played more with them. Better numbers.
All right. Here's the last one. So you mentioned that when Tom Barrasso was in the net, you felt like you could score. So he is not the goalie that you scored against the most in your career. So that's a helpful hint for you. Who was the goalie that you scored against the most?
The most? I don't know. I know that I scored my first against Kelly Rudy, and that was another one I felt like I could.
Kelly Rudy was in there. You scored 5 against him, as well as against Dominik Hasek. So that's something.
But you
actually scored the most against Bill Ranford. You had 7 against Bill Ranford.
Billy Ranford, yeah. Wow. Nice. Wow.
All right. Well, Robert Kron, this has been so awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I think the three of us have learned a lot, and I think that means that our listeners are going to learn a lot and hopefully really enjoyed this conversation. So really, like, very much, genuinely, thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome.
Well, thank you for having me. It was great. It was a blast. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you again, Robert, for joining us. That was really, really cool. I genuinely enjoyed that. And I think I probably say that after most of our interviews, but I really, really mean it this time.
Especially this time.
Yeah, especially this time.
Yeah.
Okay. So congratulations again to Crazy Calico for guessing who the correct guest was. That was pretty impressive.
We should send her a t-shirt.
Oh, well, okay. It's out of your budget. That's fine. We now move on to our segments. And our first segment is everyone's favorite segment. Goalie Gear Corner!
I think it's only my favorite segment when I'm the one who submitted the goalie gear, which I did not do this week.
So okay.
Now I'm annoyed.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to bother you with this then, but this is a pretty big one. So David Rittich, who has joined the Toronto Maple Leafs, he has done an ode to Felix Potvin with his gear. There's some interesting intricacies about this. Now, Felix Potvin, he was really like one of the first ones to start kind of coming out with his own sort of custom graphics. And remember, Coho had basically done like a whole Felix the Cat line. And so
yeah, I remember that.
When you were like a little kid, you'd like, you know, you'd look around and be like, oh man, he's got the Felix the Cat pads, right? Like they were kind of absurd, but they were also kind of cool too. But so Rittich basically got the Felix the Cat like graphics printed. There are some interesting things about it because it's obviously current pads and they're made by CCM, but Felix Potvin was a Coho guy. So at the top of the pads, it's got these little like crosshair things that are sort of like the old Coho logo, but it's not Coho pads because Coho doesn't exist anymore. So at least not for equipment. So an interesting little thing here. I think it's so cool that he did that. I feel like we've seen a lot of tributes to Felix Potvin over the years because he has such cool equipment, but I love this. I love what he did.
I like them too. These are pretty sweet.
All right, and that's all we have to say about that. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. I can't do it without laughing. You make that noise. I can't do it without laughing. All right. The Bridgeport Sound Tigers have changed their name to the Bridgeport Islanders. Now, I guess I was always a little confused as to what a Sound Tiger was. So I'm not like that sad about this. Although I lived in Connecticut for a brief while, and before I understood that the team name was the Sound Tigers, I thought that there was like a body of water right there called the Bridgeport Sound, which made a lot of sense to me. But no, they're the Bridgeport.
That wasn't a sound?
Sound Tigers. So
what is that body of water between Long Island?
And Long Island Sound.
Well, are there tigers roaming? Tigers roaming the countryside there?
There's Sound Tigers. Yeah.
No longer.
Now Andy's just being ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway, RIP to the Sound Tigers and all that stuff, I guess.
They're not moving.
No, they're just changing their name.
Changing names and logos.
Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Some kids in Ottawa threw a bunch of hats at Tim Stützle. Please explain.
Well, Tim Stützle of the Ottawa Senators scored his first career hat trick in the NHL recently, and there were no fans there, so no one threw a hat. But some local kids in the neighborhood that he's living in knew where he lives, and they all went to his house in his backyard and started throwing hats over the back fence. He came out and waved at him and thanked him. It was pretty cool to see. There was like 15, 20 kids throwing hats at his yard.
And they had an asinine amount of hats. Like,
he did. Yeah. More hats than kids.
Right. But like, they all showed up with like 10 hats apiece. Like, where did they get all those hats?
I mean, it was like a teddy bear toss.
It was. It really was like a teddy bear toss. It was like they went to like a, I don't know where they got all those hats. That was an absurd amount.
There was only like 10 kids too, but there was probably like 50 hats.
I mean, the cleanup probably took him hours. Fortunately, I saw Norris and Kachuk came out and they were like on the balcony with him as well. So hopefully they helped him clean up because it was a lot of hats. But anyway, our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. This is a guy who didn't get quite as much play on our podcast as John Tortorella, but Rick Tocchet is also out in Arizona. Do we think that he could be an option for the Seattle Kraken?
I think so. I'm not sure he's on the top of the list, but I really don't know who is now. because they're certainly taking their time. I definitely think he's okay. In Arizona, like they had a personnel problem. That team really stunk.
Relatively stunk?
No, they really did. Where Columbus relatively stunk. I mean, that team is just not very good. So I think he got a lot out of them, particularly last bubble season, you know, because they actually made the bubble and won.
He does have experience. He was in Tampa as a head coach for a while. Never really had any success, though. Last year was the only time he made the postseason in his coaching career.
Again, like the team stinks. So yep. I have this such a stupid take, but...
Ooh, please tell it. Wait, I have a hard time. Make sure we're recording. Yep, we are. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
You ready? Ready? Okay. He seems to like always yell at a referee.
He seems like really angry.
All the time.
I've noticed that too. And with this COVID thing going on, he always has to take his mask off to yell at the refs too. Yeah. Which, like at the beginning of COVID, I was like, what are you doing? Why are you always taking your mask off? And he always just looks so like, oh, God.
Was like that as a player.
That doesn't matter. He's a coach. Like, get yourself together, right? Like, this is BS. I honestly think he just looks immature, like he's throwing a temper tantrum out there.
Yeah.
I think of it as I watch a lot of college football and I always think of those high profile coaches are always like yelling at their players or freaking out. I'm like, man, these are kids here. Like, what are you doing? You're kind of losing it right in front of them. And I think Tocchet is the same way. That's my knock against him. That's my only assessment of him. So I know it's a stupid take, but it just drives me bonkers because he looks so immature when he does it. So that's my take on Rick Tocchet.
You know what they say, don't knock it till you talk it. And also, maybe he will actually get
if they
hired.
Do hire him, if they do hire him, those
trademark,
have to be t-shirts.
Trademark that. Trademark that. If they do hire him with the Kraken, then maybe you can ask him about that, John. Just be like, hey, why do you look like such a baby on the bench? That should go over pretty well.
Yeah, ask him that in person.
We'll see if he reciprocates.
Yeah. Our next weekly one-timer. We have some hirings trickling in for those new national TV deals. What are some of the updates on that, John?
Kenny Albert and Eddie Olchek are headed to Turner. Yeah. Both of them are NBC, so that's good.
Yep, and they're going to be the lead like broadcast team for TNT / TBS, right?
I think it's safe to assume that, yeah. But I didn't see if that was confirmed. But over in ESPN, Ray Ferraro will be coming back to U.S. TVs.
Woo!
And, you know, NBC does bring Ray on for the playoffs, so we get to see him there. But one thing I absolutely love about getting the NHL package is seeing Ray Ferraro. I will tune into an Ottawa versus Calgary game just to see Ray Ferraro talk because he's so brilliant. He's also a friend of the pod.
That's right.
So
he's got that big game voice. I asked him about that, about his big game voice. If it was something that just came naturally. That really is what it is. Like, he has such an intense sound. And when Ray Ferraro is on the call, it's like, ooh, this is an important game, even though it's, like you said, Calgary and Ottawa, right? And you're like, oh, man, what a game, because Ray Ferraro was here talking about it. So that's awesome.
Isn't there a story that Gretzky could be involved in somehow with ESPN?
I don't know. I didn't hear that, but that's cool.
That was
Gretzky appears to be talking to Turner as a potential, but he's dedicated to Turner.
Interesting.
For whatever reason. So.
And Brian Boucher is going to ESPN as well. Talk about a rising star in the industry. He has been so awesome.
Yeah, I love Brian Boucher.
I do like him too.
Former Shark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Will he still be in the bubble of shame like during the COVID playoffs, the bubble playoffs? Remember he was at between the benches with the encased in glass?
Yeah, I hope so. In the glass case of emotion, right?
Yeah.
That wraps up our weekly one-timers. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, your tweet of the week.
My tweet of the week comes from a guy in Vancouver, Rob Williams, a.k.a. at Rob the Hockey Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's retweeting a tweet. It's a picture of Travis Green, who is looking the coach of the Canucks, still the coach of the Canucks.
For now.
He's looking, the players are in front of him, and he's got his back to the camera. I believe he's looking at maybe the iPad that they have on the floor for a replay, but you can't see his face. He's got his back turned. And the original tweet said, caption this. And so Rob Williams' caption is, I'm not turning around till you offer me a contract, because he is still unsigned.
Oh, that's it? That's the whole tweet?
That's the tweet.
All right. Okay.
It's more of a visual tweet, but look at them.
Yeah.
That was a Canucks slanted tweet right there, Andy.
Truth be told, my original tweet was taken for another part of the show right from under my feet.
Okay.
So that's fair. Scramble.
We pulled the rug out from under you.
All right. Okay. Since we've been talking about coaches, what about Travis Green in Seattle? I think he, of the three that we've talked about, he would be the best fit. That's my take.
Yep, I think there's a fit there.
I'll hang up and listen.
I think, honestly, here's what I think. I think that the absolute dream is Rod Brind'Amour. Rod Brind'Amour, obviously, no one will say this, right? But he is under contract for now. But then there's all this talk that they're having trouble getting his contract done. So I personally think, because it's just my opinion, right? But obviously, there's a connection to Ron Francis with Rod Brind'Amour. I think that he is the one that Ron most wants to come to Seattle, but he obviously can't hire him when he's under contract. So he's going to wait until he can see if that dust settles, if he actually re-signs. And that's not done as of yet. As of Monday at 11 p.m., that is not done as far as we are aware. So we'll see what happens there. I think that's the first pick. I think there's probably a couple more coaches that get fired here within the next week or two. And then that's going to be the field that we pick from, right? You know, do you think Alain Vigneault could be on the hot seat? Philadelphia's had a terrible season. You know, we know Claude Julien is out there. Bruce Boudreau is out there. Obviously, Tortorella, Tocchet. So there are some options. You know, I think Green up in Vancouver could be. We'll see. I think there's going to be some legitimate options, and I think the Kraken were wise to wait because their field has gotten a lot bigger here just in the last 24 hours. So
I think Reed would be interesting. You know, he hasn't had a ton of success in Vancouver, but he also had a very young team and, you know, not the best management to arm him with some players. You know, this last offseason was kind of a mess. That's not Green's fault. The COVID thing probably isn't Green's fault. I wouldn't blame him on that. I do have one quick personal story with Travis Green. I had one interaction with him when he was the coach of the Portland Winterhawks. So that was
part in the elevator with him?
No. It was at a post-game media scrum in Everett. And there were like three or four reporters. And he came out of the locker room. He didn't look one of us in the eye. It was very offsetting. He answered like five or six questions, and he would just look above us the whole time.
Hmm.
Doesn't have anything to do with his coaching ability or whether he could be a good coach, but just a personal memory that I found odd at the time.
You know, that's all part of the package, though, right? It's the same reason that you probably don't want Tortorella to be the coach is because of his handling of the media, but that's neither here nor there. Hey, my tweet of the week comes from Gritty. We all know and love Gritty. So he had this pretty funny thing that he did today, or I guess in the last 24 hours or so here, where he had tweeted out basically like, what do the fans want to see me do? And he basically just like took a whole bunch of these tweets and like made it part of his game operations. So like there was one where he threw, somebody was like, I want you to throw a sheet cake at me. And he tweeted out a video of him throwing a sheet cake and hitting that woman in the face, which was funny. There was one where it was like, I want to see you race a zebra. And like one of his henchmen dressed up as a zebra and like raced him. But the particular one that I thought was very funny, because he said something in the original tweet of, I got naked a lot. Played in a ball pit, rode a mechanical bull, vacationed in Tahoe, hired and pretty much fired my first intern, threw some cake, and danced my little dancey dance. And it's a whole long thread. But this person, name can't be blank, says, honestly was okay with the amount of nudity. And then Gritty said, same. And it's just two pictures of him, you know, like, quote unquote, naked in the stands in Philadelphia. And he's like doing a couple different poses. So, you know. Love that guy. Love Gritty.
I did too.
He was amazing this year. I know they have fans now, but even when the season started and there were no fans, he was still wildly entertaining with just on TV. Yeah. Like no fans in the arena to get hyped up. I was pretty impressed that he could do that.
It was that platform, man. The platform was
key. That's right. His old little platform. Gritty's platform.
John, your tweet of the week.
I have a tweet of the week. Okay. Guys.
Great. Congratulations. Well done doing the bare minimum that we are expected to do.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think Andy did the bare minimum here. Oh. So let's.
Again, you guys use my tweet in another part of the show.
Uh-huh. All right.
I usually have six or seven on hand. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
So it's from the Chicago Steel of the USHL. They've entered the playoffs. And the tweet says, technical difficulties are preventing us from tweeting highlights, but here's a rough description of Adam Fantilli's third goal this postseason. And it's a stick figure with the number 19 jersey number and a goal in a drawn net. Pretty interesting art here. So anyway, that's my tweet of the week.
Okay. It's kind of a gotta see it tweet, but I have seen it and it is funny. So good pick on that one. But hey, we got to get out of here. This has been a long episode. So thank you all for listening. Thank you again to the Kraken for letting us chat with Robert Kron. I guess that's actually the first time that we're thanking them. But thank you to Robert Kron also for joining us. But yeah, it was a really great interview and we really did appreciate that. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Spotify, leave your 5-star review on iTunes, and we will read it on the next episode. And we'll talk to you all next week for episode 138. Cheers.